Walking out of a campus bookstore, I was reading an article by Stephen Jay Gould. It was concerning the controversy in a Kansas public school system about removing evolution from the classroom. And there was a quote by Gould that grabbed my attention. "These two great tools of human understanding, science and religion, operate in complementary, not contrary fashion." Ah, the professor's onto a rock solid point here. But then he displays the fault line in his reasoning when he adds, "Science and religion work together in their totally separate realms. Science has an inquiry about the factual state of the natural world, and religion has a search for spiritual meaning and ethical values." In other words, Gold believes that reality disjoints itself, so all the facts that we can know about reality fall entirely within a circle inscribed by scientific inquiry, while ethical values and spiritual meaning fall entirely within the theology or religion circle. Never the twain shall meet. They are two entirely separate, non-overlapping magisteria, or what he called noma. At this point, I was so captured by that restrictive viewpoint that my view was similarly restricted, and I was almost naturally selected out of the gene pool by an oncoming car. After recovering from that, I went home, and I thought about it. I said, well, what is the real relationship? What does reality show as far as the relationship between science and religion? And I came up with a view and wrote an article about it. And that was over a decade ago. Since then, there's been a lot of new discoveries that have been consistent with my view. Yet Gold's view, Noma, has come to dominate the mental landscape where science and theology discussions occur. In 1999, even the National Academy of Sciences adopted his stance. Now, Gould is the late professor, scientist, author, very intelligent man. And his accomplishments would be longer than my presentation, while mine could be stated in less than a breath. But Gould is simply wrong. And this presentation is going to point that out and provide another possible view about the relationship between science and religion through four sections. An illustration, then we'll go on to an explanation of the models, followed by an example, and finally, application of mathematics set theory if we have time, which we probably won't. An illustration, okay. Imagine yourself as the night watchman of the universe, but you're restricted to stay in the office of life. But you do have cameras throughout the house. You have a physics cam, philosophy, mathematics, theology cameras throughout the house to give you an overall view. Now, there are some areas of the house, some large areas, or even some corners, that one camera just will not get a good enough view. So what do? You turn other cameras to the same area to cooperatively illuminate those difficult areas. It's a good system. And as a watchman, you can be at least feel good that you are aware of as much as possible. Science and theology are not adversaries. They are simply different cameras or different points of view, different approaches to gain reality or to gain knowledge about reality. Explanation of the models. All right, you got to start with definitions because there's so much miscommunication when you're talking science and religion. And I'll provide the definitions I'm using in this talk. I'm not saying they're definitive by any means. For example, this one for science. I like this definition. This was just taken from Wikipedia. I like it because it focuses on what gives science its power, its scientific method. Now, you may say science is a search for causes. Yeah, sure, that's fine. However, what makes that search so powerful and so effective is that method. Others want to add to the definition and say, well, science, you have to be able to have observation and repeatable experiment to fit in that science circle. Well, you can restrict and make your science circle a little bit smaller if you want to. I think you're leaving out a lot of great advancements that we've had in science, including inference, and I know Gould is with me on that. He spoke very harshly of people who try to leave inference out of science. But the definition of science is debatable. The examples that I'm going to use, though, are universally accepted to fit within this science circle. theology. Now, I've moved from religion, saying science versus religion, or science and religion, to science and theology, because religion's broad, a little bit more broad than I want to get into. Theology I like because, and even this definition I chose, because it's similar to, it's just pointing out that it's just like science. It provides a perspective or approach to gather knowledge about reality. Now, you can say theology is the study of God. Sure. But again, I'm just using this as a way to move forward in this presentation. So now here is the NOMA, or non-overlapping magisteria, model. If you'll notice, you see the two circles, a circle that inscribes what we learn from science, and one that where we gain knowledge about in theology. And notice how they are just entirely separate. This is the NOMA view. Now, for NOMA, for his view to be accurate, all four of those points, it's accurate if and only if all four of these points are valid. There's no area of life or reality that can be addressed simultaneously by both fields. Theology cannot add anything to the factual knowledge we have about reality. That was directly from his quotes. The separate fields cannot support or refute each other because they're entirely separate. And theology can't provide a predictive, testable scientific model. Here's the view that I came up with. I call it the symbiotic overlapping magisteria. You notice at the top how I have science and Christianity with the circles intersecting, kind of like a Venn diagram. Now, again, I'm kind of moving. I could have this be science and theology, but I'm focusing on Christianity because when I looked at other different belief systems, I didn't find the same kind of interplay there. Now, Christianity is part of theology, but based on this audience and the fact that I'm only seeing this really symbiotic relationship with Christianity, that's why I'm restricting it, limiting it down even further. So the SOMA model. Now, this model is accurate if and only if these four points occur, and they're basically in opposition to NOMA. There will be areas of life where both can cooperatively add knowledge on the same topic. They can correct and corroborate each other. They might add multiple lines of verification if they're studying the same thing, or one might correct the other. Christianity provides a predictive, testable model, and there's a lot of examples. And when looking for examples, we can start right at the beginning. So here's the example, or the knockout shot. Now, I've put this, so here's the area covered by science. If I'm looking for some things having to do with quantum mechanics, I'm not going to look in this circle. I'm going to look over here. If I'm looking for certain things, like he says about ethical values or spiritual meaning, I'll look over here. I might look a little bit in science. But there are some things that are right in that intersection of both of them. And the beginning of the universe is one of them. We have the world, all these different worldview religions have made claims about the beginning of the universe, as has, and have studied that, as science has also. So let's just go through the basic steps of the scientific method. First, let's start with something we can all agree on. We exist. Now, unless you're a first-year philosophy student or an excessive Matrix fan, we can just take that as a basic. Now, if we exist, that existence only gives us a couple possibilities. Either this universe and everything in it had a beginning, or it did not. And it's eternal and uncaused. Simple. Two possibilities. Second step of the scientific method, our hypotheses or our models. Now, this is nice because the different models here separate themselves pretty cleanly. The general view of scientists up through Einstein's time, even up until the 1950s, was the universe was uncaused and eternal. It was a primary tenet of atheism. Now, I don't want to set up a straw man. I'm not saying all atheists believe this. From what I've been reading and seeing, though, it seemed like the vast majority, you might read in the Humanist Manifesto and so on, different things, but most atheists, from what I see, believe that the universe was eternal. There was no cause. Most other religions, Hinduism had a cyclical universe, but still said it was eternal overall. And just common experience. Sun comes up, sun goes down. It did yesterday, today, and forever. I mean, I would just assume universe is eternal just based on that, just common experience. The Bible on the other hand, takes the completely other side of the issue. And not only says that, but says a number of different specific things about the beginning. It says all that is in the universe, all matter, energy, space, time, everything that's in the physical universe had a beginning. Time had a beginning. They both began at the same time. They began out of something that was not visible. And they follow the fixed laws of nature. Third step. We have multiple Nobel Prize winners, some of the best scientists, some of the greatest discoveries in science, all kinds of things involved in the study of the beginning of the universe. And the evidence is in. All the evidence that we have is that there was a beginning of the universe. I'm not saying that there aren't other theories, but I am saying all the evidence we have is that the universe had a beginning. I like Alexander Vilenkin's quote. He said, if evidence is what it takes to convince a reasonable man, and proof is what it takes to convince even an unreasonable man, with the proof now in place, we have to face the problem of a cosmic beginning. So the universe did have a beginning. So what science now knows, around 14 billion years ago, universe came into existence and started as a super small, super hot, super dense universe that then started expanding out and cooling. And the interesting thing is, so all matter, energy, space, time, everything came into existence out of what was not before. Time had a beginning. They began together in what was fabric of space-time. And the interesting thing is, you might see this little at the edge there. This is exactly what the Bible had said over 2,500 years previous. Those are predictions. Analysis. So at this point, based on what we know, the idea that there was no beginning and all the different worldviews, the general view of science and so on at the time, was inaccurate about that. There was a beginning and the Bible got it. And those that were specifically involved in this study, they didn't fail to recognize the significance of it. For example, Sir Frederick Hoyle, who was one of the ones who had a static universe model, he basically said that when he was told that there was a beginning and that he called it scientific genesis. Robert Jastrow, the founder of NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies, said, astronomical evidence leads to a biblical view of the origin of the world. The essential element in the astronomical and biblical accounts of Genesis is the same. Nobel Prize winners Penzias and Wilson, who were in a picture earlier, added respectively, the best data we have concerning the Big Bang are exactly what I would have predicted had I had nothing to go on but the five books of Moses, the Psalms, and the Bible as a whole. And certainly there was something that set it all off. I can't think of a better theory of the origin of the universe than to match Genesis. So what's the bottom line with just this one example? There is an area of reality, of the natural world, that was addressed both by theology and science that falsifies Noma. Theology actually added accurate knowledge about the natural world. Now it's doubly falsified. It also provided it in a testable form of a model. It gave multiple clear, specific statements about the beginning of the universe over 2,500 years in advance of modern science. I think if Moses didn't mention God in any of it, he might have been posthumously given the first Nobel Prize for advanced theorizing. When I went to UC Berkeley, there was an audience of several hundred students, some professors, and some a graduate atheist club. I presented the different statements the Bible made, gave the verses and so on. We went over them. Then I said, do you think the Bible's worth looking into further? Is there something special about it? They said, oh, well, there's errors in it. And I said, well, that's a whole other question. We could talk about that. Is the Bible worth looking into based on what we covered? They tried to give me another red herring. I answered it the same way. Finally, the third time I asked the question, there was silence. And I let it go for on about two or three times longer than what's normal, so it became really awkward. And I just basically said, if you're not finding, you know, evidence, if you don't have other examples that are similar to this, with multiple clear specific that far in advance of modern science, then there is something unique that needs to be dealt with. Fourth, symbiotic. In just this example here, science was heading down the wrong road. And a theological model actually pointed in the right direction. But this goes both ways. I mean, we all know the story from with Galileo. Science had to do some corrective work there. Aristotle's idea that the Earth was the center and the sun, everything revolved around us, it took over the science of the time, it took over the church, and the church actually started finding verses to support it. Galileo said, you're not looking at this the right way. He's like, I agree with your Bible, but I don't agree with you. And so science pointed out some bad hermeneutics. This is a mutually supportive, beneficial relationship when you can have different fields of study both point at the same thing. It's symbiotic. So here's just overall chart. There's just three of the areas. Noma said none of those things should happen. Soma says all of them should happen. The beginning shows all of them did happen. Set theory. I don't have time for this, but what you might notice is the science and theology circles where they intersect, it looks very much like a Venn diagram. And you can say things like, let A be the set of all knowledge we can learn about from scientific inquiry. Let B be all the things we can learn either from a God providing us information or from the study of God. And here's the intersection. And if there's anything in this intersection, Soma is accurate, Noma isn't. And if you want a formal proof of it, I'll have it in the paper, but there's some examples. And you can do this not only in astrophysics, you can also do it with psychology, with the Sermon on the Mount. You can also do it with history. You can do it in multiple different areas of study, just pointing all at the same area. So as a conclusion, just a few things I wanted to note. There are facts of life where different fields of study can cooperatively illuminate, and they can mutually benefit and support each other. Christianity provides a testable model, and you'll see trends of evidence. Trends are important. You see them in our health. You see them in the economy. Trends show long-term looking at data. I mean, you can always have data go up and down to support this way or that, but when you have a trend line going up, that's telling you something. Also, I think this Soma model, it allows for dynamic, basically a proper approach. I think if you restrict worldview questions entirely to the church or entirely to the lab, that's restrictive. No one lives their life entirely in the lab or in the church, and if they do, they have issues. If you want to properly approach something, you don't divide up and separate reality into all these different little areas. You integrate. Integrating all the different fields provides you the widest coverage, and it provides multiple lines of verification or invalidation of certain things that one view might have wrong. So to have a proper, if you want solid discussion, both in the public and so on, you can't be coming from different fields, because you're just going to talk past each other like Dr. Seuss's axes. What you need is, you need to be integrated so that both sides are coming from the same kind of viewpoint. The watchman described earlier is a person. And when a person is involved, even the best systems can fail. There are some people who want to turn off the history cam because it always focuses on the past. Or the mathematics cam because they think the wiring is bad. Well, I know mathematicians, and they might be wired differently, but the view it provides is solid. So if someone chooses to disregard or ignore what some camera, the theology camera or the science cam or whatever, if they decide to ignore the viewpoint that provides, they better show that viewpoint doesn't provide any unique evidence or anything that the other ones miss, or else that watchman self-inhibits their view and creates a blind spot. And it could be from that point in the house, from that blind spot, where unintended consequences enter and hurt that watchman. Thank you. So I have my beliefs in theology. However, when science brings something, if it brings something different, then I have to take it into account and look at it. Now, when I talk about it in a different form, though, so let's say someone hits me with, well, what about, Stephen, what about what they say about, what do they call that? Vacuum fluctuations, they might say. Well, then you just deal with each one. Now, each one, I've looked at all the different options. It's been a while since I looked at them, but aside from the fact that they all have serious flaws, they don't have a shred of evidence of support. And all the evidence we do have, and it is vast, and it's filled with some of the best discoveries in science, say that we do have a beginning. So it's on pretty firm ground. So if I'm ever saying, well, I don't have any evidence for something, and there's massive evidence for something else, but something might change in the future, I know I'm not on very solid ground. Like, for example, the vacuum fluctuation. Well, they try to say, well, things pop into existence all the time. Well, my area is physics. And so, yeah, do things come out of the vacuum and you have these particle-antiparticle pair and then they go back into... Sure. But the problem is we discovered the universe came out of nothing. A vacuum is a very definite something. They're equivocating on the words between what nothing and something is. A vacuum is filled with the space energy density. And so there's just so much energy there that happens to go into E equals mc squared. It turns into particles and then turns back into energy again. So first of all, they're conflating something from nothing when they're using it. Second of all, to believe that something that's part of the universe went back in time before the universe to then produce itself and the universe is equivalent to me giving birth to my parents. So there's every theory that's been given as far as the beginning. That's why I like using the beginning. Because right now, all the theories given against it have massive problems against them, zero evidence for them. Could it be flipped in the future? Possibly. But I wouldn't bet on it, just because right now I'm going where the evidence is pointing. Well, that's an excellent question, first of all. If he did have any evidence, though, it would have been brought up against the beginning. And right now, it's overwhelmingly accepted because all the evidence points there.
Right, but can we imagine any evidence that would have proved or would have even pointed to the fact that the universe was eternal?
Can we imagine any?
Yeah.
It's possible, but it's not really plausible. You also see a lot of reaction against it. I mean, he came right out and said, that's scientific genesis. And he said that in a harsh way. So there was definitely bias against the idea, but I can't speak for him because I don't really know. Absolutely. I'm not sure, though, of all the reasons that they may have had for thinking that, but I think you're right. And I know once it started becoming clear that it is expanding and so on, they tried some ad hoc things to try to make it not be. Like, I think Hoyle said that you can have hydrogen atoms pop into existence and then kind of spread from there. But, so, yeah, yep. Continue, yeah, yeah.
Is there anything else that goes
inside? You could put a lot of history things. There's a lot of things where history and archaeology, the Bible said, did a lot of talking about the Hittites. And history, archaeologists said, well, there's no Hittites. There was no such people. For a while they said that. But now they found tens of thousands of artifacts. They said there was no Davidic tunnel. They said there was no writing during Moses' time. But then they found the steel. So there's a lot of things in history. Sermon on the Mount's kind of interesting. There's a professor who wouldn't give his name because of he's afraid of what it might do as far as career-wise. He's on the West Coast, and I'm giving this secondhand, so you can take it for a grain of salt. He's on the West Coast. He's so prized for his lectures that other professors, they'll line the hallways to hear this guy when he talks. Someone asked him, they said, what's the secret to a happy life? You're Mr. Psychology. What's the secret to a happy life? He said, don't attribute this to my name. But he said, the most concise, perfect expression of how to have a happy life is the Sermon on the Mount. And if you look in your own life, when you follow things there, some of them are very counterintuitive. However, they work. So there's something that the Bible gave ahead of its time that was accurate. You can also talk about even the cause of the universe. I mean, the next step from the beginning is, okay, well, what caused it? You know, is it a natural cause? Is it a God using a nature? Is it just a God poof miracle kind of thing? What was the cause? And the Bible said, well, the cause is outside of time, outside of space, all powerful, and can work miracles. what we found about the beginning of the universe right now is it began out of what was not before. So whatever began the universe has to be not part of space, not part of time, or not part of matter, energy, nothing of the physical universe. So it must be outside of nature. The word for that's supernatural. Supernatural, by definition, it's outside of nature. So we know there is a supernatural cause of the universe. However, what they might say is you can say, well, it's some super form of matter or gravity. There's big arguments against those two. But regardless, it's a supernatural cause. The cause also has to be outside of time. The cause also has to be able to violate natural laws, because the entire matter and energy of the universe was created at an instant. That violates the law of conservation of matter and energy, a very, very, you know, solidly proven law of nature. So whatever caused the universe violated that. And the cause of the universe has to be more powerful than the entire universe's power summed up together, because second law of thermodynamics, this power is winding down. Eventually, we're going to end up in a heat death where all available energy is used up. And the amount of energy that can do work over time is power. So when you take it back to the beginning, whatever caused that has to have more power than the entire universe put together. So there are four or five properties right there of the cause of the universe that fit precise, scarily, eerily precise to a biblical description of God. Now, am I saying that they're not going to find some... Oh, maybe there are multiple universes. Oh, I'm not saying that. Bible doesn't say anything about it. So, sure, there could be. However, even those would need a beginning. There's a paper on that by Borg, Guth, and Vilenkin. And whatever caused that beginning still has to fit all those properties that fit God. So I don't know if God used some supernatural stuff or it was him himself, but that's another area. The cause of the universe fits right in that intersection. Yeah, thank you.